meeting to order. And John, would you call a roll, see if we got...
Just Jerry? It's here. Judge Armstrong? John Ariscotta?
Present.
Bob Bell? David Carroll? Drew Christensen?
Present.
Judge Fairman? Franny Forsman? Judge Herndon? Chris Hicks? Judge Higgins? Kristen Hill? Dana Lavoc? Judge Kaysen?
Here.
Phil Cohn?
Here.
Michael Kagan joined us on the phone.
Yep, here.
Chris Lawley? John Lambros? Should be joining by phone. Judge Montero? Mark Picker?
Here.
Amy Rose? Diane Roth? Sean Rowe? Judge Schlegelmilch?
Here.
Judge Shirley? Judge Simons? John Slaughter? Dagny Stapleton? Jonelle Thomas?
Here.
Judge Wonker? Jeff Wells?
Here.
Judge Young? And anybody I didn't call? All right.
I'm assuming we have a quorum time.
Actually, it appears we do not have a quorum.
How short are we?
We have 14 people present out of 37 total.
Well, we have the new public defender, Mr. Jared Neely.
Yes.
Who's now officially a member, so if you found him,
thank you. All right.
Still working. What is it, funny, Red? Kick the people.
That's true.
Never come up.
John, we lose some people.
All right.
What we'll do is we'll go into what we call a subcommittee. Is there any public comment in any of the venues that we have? Any public comment? Seeing none or hearing none. We need a motion to accept the review and approval of the October 30th meeting summary.
So moved.
Moved by Jeff and seconded by Phil Cohn. All those in favor, so say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Next, is David Carroll on the phone?
I do not believe so.
John, would you try to give an update on where we are with the Nevada Council Commission, BDR?
It has been introduced as a bill. It's AB 81. You can see in the packet it's the bill draft language, but it's the same as the bill. So this is what was reluctantly approved, if I can editorialize. At the last Right to Counsel Commission meeting. And so I don't know if anyone who was at that meeting wants to make a comment. The bill creates the Office of Indigent Defense Oversight. There are still some concerns, shall I say, with primarily the funding and sort of the state's obligation for funding and oversight and standards being contingent upon that. There's a group meeting next week to review the language of the bill draft and see if can come up with some mandatory language that would make it more palatable to all the parties involved and still respect the need to not tie the legislature, a future legislature's hands, so to speak, with regards to making funding obligations. So that's kind of where we stand. Obviously, the session starts the first Monday in February, which I think is the fourth this year, maybe, and will be considered there. You can also see in your packet on pages, I believe, 42 and 43, an explanation of the bill draft from LCB that did the drafting there. Happy to answer questions or anything else.
Stakeholders, there'll be meetings to go over the possible provisions and amendments.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the first part of that, sir.
Who would be meeting with you as far as the stakeholders that are going to be meeting on the revisions and amendments?
I believe it's myself, David Carroll, John Lambrose, Dagny Stapleton from NACO, Joni Easley. I think Jeff Wells was going to participate, or am I making that up?
I was invited, but you guys scheduled it so early in the morning, I'll get there 5 minutes late.
All right. I believe that was the core group. It's next week. I'd have to look at my calendar. I think it's the 19th in the morning.
If anybody from the commission is interested, may they attend?
My understanding is this was going to be a small group meeting to get things going, and it's being hosted by NACO, and I don't really want to speak on behalf of them as far as...
No, that's fine, but just make sure that we get a report on it so I can't distribute it to the members of the commission as to what's going on. I don't think that the actual Nevada Right to Counsel Commission will be meeting until the bill's passed.
And you're right, John. It's next Wednesday morning.
Okay. Thank you.
Also, I want to remind everybody of the one thing we've got to hold on to is this, John, as you well know, is that this is in the governor's budget. It's all a little different. And I talked to Barbara Buckley, who's on the commission committee, and she's the one who suggested that Risa Lang, our LCB person, right here, one thing. But I also talked to John Lambrose, who was going to make sure he got in touch with Barbara personally. And that goes, Barbara's, you know, our friend, for sure, about this. She's got skills here, and he's new. I don't think he knows a lot about initial defense or about public defenders, to tell you the truth. So he does. I don't expect somebody who's been in the commission necessarily, you know, to their deputies like you, Jeff.
So that's it for that. At least we got it going. Next is the Clark County Arraignment Process Update. Drew?
I spoke with Judge Linda Bellick yesterday. Listened to an arson who was in the arraignment court in anticipation of starting in January as it is the. I don't know what they're doing in the interim. I think they're going to have the
rotating
very master
judges.
Oh, district judges.
Oh, judges are doing it again.
But I know that Judge Miller just hired 3 hearing masters yesterday. I don't think she has a comfortable with who she's placing where they are, but she hired the individuals based on their kind of specialty court backgrounds, educational experience, and desires.
You know who they are?
Shannon Whitford from the DA's office. Tim Andrews used to be counsel in this university in Q2. And there's a third that came, somebody that I recognize. But that Linda still had a vision going forward to ultimately have pleas taken by the district court, but it's a work in progress and discussions with, you know, the new judges that they're looking forward to putting in front of the legislature, how that goes. But that when she picked the hearing, I think she had to move for their desires to be over special courts. That's her long-term goal, to take all the special courts and let the district court position when they went to the hearing masters.
Hey, Drew, can I jump in there?
Yes, please do.
Hi, it's Judge Herndon.
Oh, I'm good, Judge. And also, Chris Lally's here now. Chris, thank you for being here.
Yes.
Oh, Judge.
I can tell you that with the arraignment court process, well, we just made a change that started on Monday of this week, where I changed it so none of the homicide cases go to lower level arraignment any longer. We're binding those straight out of justice court into the district court, regardless of whether it's not guilty plea or a guilty plea. They all come straight to me, and then we work on the assignments from there. We're going to see how the logic works with that, with our computer system. I don't anticipate any problems with it. It's kind of separate from Linda's ideas about arraignment court in total, but we are doing it on the homicide cases now.
Janelle, did you want to comment on that at all?
Yeah, I think that's a great change.
Jeff, what's going on with as far as the hearing masters for specialty court? Do that have any interest to us? I know that Jack Lane is probably spinning his grave, but you always wanted a district court judge to handle specialty court. And don't forget, we had the fifth drug court in the country here because of Jack.
Yeah. Yeah, I think at this point, that's really an additional call. So let her do what she wants to do on that.
Chris, do you have any input as far from the DA's offices to the arraignment, the situation, maybe the process?
So we really, as a general proposition, don't take an issue on it, one way or another. We weren't in favor of it when it started. We didn't oppose it, and it happened under the promise of this is going to free up district court judges' time, and as a result, more time for trial. So I'm not sure whether or not that has happened. Obviously, when a plea is entered, we want it to be done in a constitutionally valid manner. That means that there's enough time for that client to talk with his or her attorney and really enter a knowing and voluntary plea. We want that to happen. And so we would, you know, not be in favor of something that's detracted from that. A concern that we do have is, and I don't know that there's anything anybody can do about this, some judges, and it's like when you look to Judge Bonaventure, was very adept at moving things along, getting cases to trial, and if you look at his record on appeal, was I think constitutionally efficient in doing that. I think there are other judges today who are going to be very, very bogged down with taking pleas and moving cases along, and I think what we're going to see is justice sort of bogged down possibly because of that. But still, those are judicial decisions on how they run the court, and formally we take no position in favor or against it.
Bill, you have anything to add from the public defender's office here?
No, I've made my position clear that I think the arraignment court is a really bad idea. The judges never see the clients until after they read a probation report. The judges should absolutely take their pleas.
I spent some time down there, and this is Jonelle, this week, and pretty much hate every aspect of it. The fact that it feels like it's in a dungeon, it's dark in there, the sound system is bad, the windows seem to be tinted, and the complete lack of opportunity for private conversations with attorneys. It's demeaning to have it in that location, but the whole process, it seems, and I'm wondering if there isn't some kind of hybrid approach where not just homicide cases go to the district court judges, but maybe all A and B level felonies. There's got to be a better solution than this.
And I still think you got a problem if you limit it to A and B felonies, and you still got that whole bunch of those other felonies. It just isn't any, there is right. No way to comply with performance standards with the way it's set up. Just what happened.
Yeah, that's what's aggravating. We've had a performance standard since 2008, and now in 2018, it's stepped backwards. It doesn't make any sense. Drew, what are you going to do? Is there something
I'll just monitor with Judge Bell. I mean, I was aware of the Judge Ernest situation. Put that out.
Well, that's good. At least there's some movement. Especially the folks charged with the homicides.
But the good news was, when I met with Judge Bell, she brought the conversation about it.
Yeah, she's aware of it. She was aware.
But I think it's just a matter of monitoring the movement of the legislature to see how district court reacts to how the legislature provides for potential new judges, and then how that domino effect other ancillary considerations within the court system.
Might there also be some talk about training judges how to do the prompt plea canvas? I've seen some of the more troublesome departments where there might not be a recognition that we're not in federal court. We have more than five cases on a calendar. I think maybe some education would help. Some training on the bench.
That's the one aspect that I observed in arraignment court that I thought was done well. I think your canvases, Melissa Garza's canvases were efficient and they were thorough and they were respectful of the client. You know, that, and so maybe she
and I didn't see And the stuff I saw was okay. Well, other than the sound system is so bad that everyone is repeating themselves constantly.
People back
and how much time are you saving if you have to go through the plea canvas twice? I think there are some improvements that can be made.
John, you want to talk to judicial education to see if they can set something up for our criminal judges? Might as well make it statewide. I mean, 82 judges are up for re-election in 2020. And also, you've got Ben and his group, going for more judges. And there may be some people that are going to say, the legislatures, have you seen the arraignment court? And that'll be a private citizen during that private time. I expect to speak up on some
issues. Phil, you're the one that is really rolling, isn't it? I think if they would stop asking, so do you like your defense attorney? Is your defense attorney being your pal or friend?
Wait, you know where that comes from, don't you? Federal courts. Then that, what they used to do, George and the rest of them? No, they used to. I don't forget, I haven't been there in 20 years.
They tried to tie down your post-conviction.
If they could just skip that, things would go a little smoother.
I'll tell the story. I remember seeing a guy named Melvin Geary. And he ended up dying in prison on death row. But I represented him on a murder case out in North Las Vegas when there was no death penalty at the time. Now, we were before Judge Compton, who was in Department 2 before Brent. And they used to ask, I had a deal that he did second degree murder. And they asked him about, before he pled, how are you getting along with your attorney? He said, I need this guy like leprosy. Let me tell you, as a young attorney, that just broke my heart. So we ended up taking him to trial, and it was against Jeff Silver and Oberon Kripitzroller. Jeff Silver, he's a DA. He got convicted of murder and got life without the real estate. You get paroled. So he got paroled, and then he went to Sparks and he killed some guy up there. And then he was on death row, but he had cancer and died. So that's the end of the story. And that's leprosy. The leper survived, and he didn't. Yeah, that's the story. I don't know if this is going into this arraignment process. This is ridiculous. This is one of the most important areas of criminal law when you're as a defense attorney, you develop a relationship, and it should be for a district court judge, not some master. You know, and the judge has got to grow up. If they want the job, if it's the money, then don't. If the money issue, then screw it. If it's the work, then screw it. Go do something else. They have no right to throw away that issue in the criminal justice. It's a critical stage of the plea.
But Michael, didn't we just hear that a couple of the masters are doing as good a job, maybe even better?
But it's in mess.
The problem is the way that the clients from their perspective, it's just like if you're talking with the real country, it's just crazy.
You have no ability to outcome. Next to your client, taking questions, looking through plexiglass and microphone.
I'll sworn you and John. Yeah. You may have two great witnesses opposing more judges on the basis of this thing, this process, from Phil Cole, from Fannie Forsman, and from me.
Hey, Michael, Michael, can I jump in? The only thing I take exception to is saying the judges need to grow up. I think if you ask the judges, they would be fine with the idea of judges taking pleas. I think we like arraignment court. It's not necessarily that we like where it's located or that a hearing master's doing it. We just like the idea that there's a dedicated plea calendar so that we can get through our law and motion calendars more efficiently for purposes of trials and for the attorneys. That's it. If we had judges hearing that calendar, I mean, I've heard that calendar multiple times, and I think it is good for a judge to be interacting with the clients when they're taking their pleas. Sometimes you just, things don't go real smoothly, and sometimes I think clients have a much more acceptable ability to get through a plea canvas when they feel like they're able to engage with the judge and ask questions and get them answered. I actually think that a lot of the lower level crimes are the more difficult ones. The homicide clients are usually more prepared by their attorneys and understanding of the plea, whereas other cases, particularly if you have a mentally disabled individual or somebody else that has some other challenges, you know, the plea can be more challenging. And so having judges do it is good. But if you think about how many pleas Melissa takes on that calendar during the week, if you say, let's push all of those into the district court, we're not going to be able to get to trials until the afternoon on any given day.
But Judge Herndon, they're not right now, this is Phil, they're not getting to trial in the mornings anyway in most of the departments. And I think what troubles me the most is that judges didn't take the plea, so they don't know the facts of the case. They don't find anything out until they read the probation report, make a decision what they're probably going to do, and then see the client for the first time. Judge, that just really troubles me. The whole system is troubled.
For enforcement, when we first start looking at this, it's also the in en masse aspect of it, which is really causing an impediment to vertical representation too. So you've got not only the lack of privacy, which it's also the number, as you pointed out, the number of people that are there taking pleas at the same time.
Oh no, I know. Look, Phil and I have had a lot of conversations about it. I recognize the disadvantages to the program. I just think from the judge's standpoint, we're trying to, and I get that there are, look, not every judge is the same. We have a lot of inefficiencies in how some of the judges handle their calendars and what they do or do not do, and when they do or do not get them. I just know that those of us that are trying to get trials done with any kind of efficiency understand that there's value in having a separate calendar. Not saying that the location or who's hearing it is optimal, but having a separate calendar that addresses those things. And you know, I don't know that the answer is necessarily to have more judges, although that might be nice. I kind of agree with what Jonelle was alluding to, that there's got to be some hybrid way maybe of doing this better. That allows a better comfort level with everybody about how we're doing it.
Accepts those comments, Doug. I'm sorry, you know, we're good friends, but when it comes to the critical stage of the proceeding, the fact that they're going to do a PI case for mom and pop versus a C felony or a D felony, somebody pleading guilty, that's a big deal.
I would still rather see a discovery commissioner to take some of the burdens off the district court judges that would free them up to then do pleas. And then I think if you had one person hearing all of the discovery issues, that person could be more attuned to the abuses that go on, or the bottlenecks and the issues that are out there.
Sure. Well, I think that, for purposes of what you're talking about, Mike, what we're going to see over the course of, and I apologize, I keep calling you Michael, I'm sorry, Justice.
Hey, you're always my stepson in this.
My mother-in-law says hello, by the way. it's a long story, folks. It's a long story. But I think
all the time in the world.
We will see over the course of the next month or so, even though there won't be a tremendous amount of homicide cases coming up through the justice court, so that you're getting a true understanding of it. I've been taking the pleas in most of those cases for quite some time, and I mean, that's not entirely or incredibly cumbersome on me, but the homicide cases are a small fraction of the entirety of it. But we'll see over the next couple of months when those cases are coming up avoiding arraignment court, you'll kind of get a good understanding of how that process is working. One of the reasons I wanted to do it was to kind of make it more efficient for the attorneys that handle those cases, not just to engage with the clients, although that's helpful, but I'm obviously not going to keep all the cases or getting assigned out as well. But I think it makes it more efficient for the attorneys that handle the cases.
Back up. I think you should have a periodic review of the model plan.
agree.
I'm not sure you automatically need a periodic review of the court plans unless either they are submitting an amendment or B, we amend the model plan.
No, model plan, they may be out of compliance.
Yeah, but so I would start with a periodic review of the model plan, and only if there's a change there, and we start triggering it out there.
And I think that, you know, if the AB 81 goes through in some form, it may well be that the Office of Indigent Defense Services, I think, I suspect that they would, although it's not in the bill, I suspect that they would be looking at plans, because that's what they're looking at.
Well, I'm talking about this one of the deputy directors.
Right, it would have
is supposed to be looking at how it's being provided, so they would obviously get it.
Right.
Here's some good news for that. You mentioned walking on earlier. I got a call from a car company. He's taking a look here in Washoe County. So he called me the other day. He's going to fly down after the holidays and review together our model plans to get a feel for what they're doing right or wrong.
What's his name again?
Carter Conway?
Yeah, Carter Conway.
Yes. This is John Arascotta up in Reno. We had appointed a new appointed council administrator. His name's Carter Conway. We've urged him to reach out to Drew because we need to create we have to standardize our record keeping, our distribution of cases, all statistics regarding our appointed council. And we think Cotter's going to do a fine job doing that. And that's why we have him also reaching out to you to come down and review how Drew handles appointed council administration.
Yeah, he called the other day. And we were planning on meeting. He was going to look into trying to fly down for the day. We spent the day to get right go through.
We do that. They're paying his bring down to spend the day. And additionally, just to give you background, Cotter is a former public defender, former alternate public defender up here. He's been in private practice for a number of years, and he's been on our appointed attorney oversight committee for the last 2 years. So he's got a lot of background in indigent defense, which is why he's chosen that position.
Okay, great.
Well, maybe the thing to do would be, and I agree with Jeff Wells. Maybe what we should do is when we have the next meeting, I can go on the agenda. I'll look at the model plan and we can talk about the model plan. Because most of us probably haven't looked at the model plan at one. We can look at it if there are any changes that people that would suggest that we would start working on.
Next is the urban county defender selection process. Is Jeff on the phone?
I don't think he's been able to join us.
Look, we'll send that over to the next meeting. Indigent Defense Screening Tool and Checklist, John McCormick.
excuse me, on page 46 of the packet, you see a brief memo from me. This was in response to something we talked about a couple meetings ago. But I put together sort of a quick checklist for appointment of counsel that you'll see on page 48. It has a couple attachments with it, and it specifies the ADKT 411 standard of indigence. And then towards that end, I put together, based on Washington and Montana and a couple other states, an indigent screening affidavit that you'll see on page 52 and 53 for review by the commission to see if you want changes, if we want to disseminate this to the trial courts or other action. And then a third point in the memo, in looking at this, I made sure to include in both documents that the defendant should be informed that pursuant to 178.3975, they may be required to reimburse the government for part or all of the cost of public representation. However, in that statute, it allows payment to be ordered based on a based if the defendant will be able to do so, and it seemed kind of odd to me to base an order for payment on a prospective ability to pay without guidance there. So I wanted just to call that point to the commission's attention to see if there was any feedback on that.
Questions or comments on that?
And if anyone has comments on the documents and wants to do it offline or send me their changes, I'd be more than happy to look at those and make those changes. As far as the affidavit, after being vetted by the ADC, I was thinking of making it a fillable PDF so to hopefully help the courts with that.
I'm going to skip down to Megan Hoffman, since at least. So, Megan, you want to give us a report on the Federal Public
Defender? We've been really busy, as you know, discussing the murder cases that are going forward. We're getting lots of them, and we're also are seeing an uptick, as we have the last couple of years, in the habitual offender cases that are getting assigned to our office. A lot of lights out cases are coming our way for relatively minor felonies. And then I don't think it's a secret, it's been in the paper that we've been very actively working on the Dozier case, as that case is kind of in limbo at the moment. But yeah, both our capital unit and our non-capital habeas unit are at the highest case levels we've had, at least in the history that I've been in the office.
Any questions or comments to Federal Public Defender?
He's very busy again.
Chris, you want to talk about the homicide case pilot project?
Is Judge Morgan on the line?
I'm still here, Chris.
Judge, you might be in a better position to discuss it than I am.
I just sent out a copy to Jamie and to Chris today, just our updated stats as of right now. So for 2018, I can tell you that we've tried 30 cases this year, two of which were capital cases. There have been 158 cases resolved through a non-trial resolution, either a dismissal or a plea. I think that included 11 homicide cases being dismissed, and then the rest were entry of plea. We've assigned out 132 cases so far this year. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean those cases were filed this year. It could be a reversal of a 30-year-old conviction, or it could be a case that was indicted 3 weeks ago. It's just 132 cases have been assigned out this year. 188 total have been resolved, either through the trial, the plea, or the dismissal. So we're at plus 56 on that, which is really encouraging. And then from the standpoint of cases that are active right now, we have 190 cases that are non-capital cases pending trial and 55 capital cases pending trial. So a total of 245 homicide cases that are still pending right now.
Do you have any questions to the judge?
I think the homicide pilot project from our perspective is working really well. We're sorry to see Judge Togliatti retiring. I think that's going to be a big loss, but looking forward to being with Judge Volani, and it's been a good program.
Megan, do you have any comments on this program as far as the federal public is concerned?
We haven't seen too many of these come to our office yet because it's still so new. I suspect we'll have some thoughts once we get there, but I've heard from Jonelle's office that it seems to be fairly streamlined now.
Bill?
Yeah, I think it's working well.
Darren, do you see any changes as far as your office is concerned as the murder team or anything?
Don't anticipate.
Chris, do you have anything you want to add?
No, it's a crushing caseload for our office, which is a concern. I've talked in this group about our caseloads versus other folks, and you know, our prosecutors have anywhere from 35 to 45 cases, which is outrageous. But we've got to do something about the murder cases that are in the county. We gotta move it through. The murder rate is not going down, so this is the new normal.
Jeff, what's
well, I know.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just gonna say, I know that there has, that the, you know, the resolution rate, whether it's trial or plea, has substantially increased over the time prior to the institution of the project. And I would hope that people's approval of the project recognizes that it's not just about efficiency. I mean, I think we're being more efficient while still maintaining fairness to everybody, because I know during my conversations, Janelle has been complimentary, Scott Coffey, we've talked a lot about it, believes that things are working well. And the detention center had said that over the course of the first year, I think we saved the county about $1.7 million in getting cases resolved, particularly a lot of older cases, so that those folks were moving out of the detention center. So, I'm happy where we are. There's always a discussion about whether we should expand the number of judges. I think Jonelle would agree in particular, because she's been in on these meetings on a number of occasions with myself and Linda and some of our other partners, that right now I think four judges is working. That doesn't mean that we might need to expand it at some point in the future, if we can do so without watering down what's working by having just a smaller number in the group.
Drew, the other thing you were saying, I'll get back to you now in a second.
No, what's nice is Judge Herman's JEA sends out monthly update. It's nice to kind of measure what they have versus what we have, so we kind of make sure we're on the same page as far as what we can win.
How are you doing with your 250 qualified people? You got enough?
We're stressed. We have about 18 that are actively accepting cases, and they're getting to critical mass.
Well, is there Phil Cohen right here on that list?
We've talked about that, Justice Sheriff. You know?
This is Judge Schlagenauch. I'm sorry, I gotta get into court.
Go ahead. So, now I'm back to court. Go ahead.
Tattoo.
So this is Judge Schlagenauch. I just need to get back into court, so I'm gonna have to take off. Thank you.
Thank you for participating.
One aspect the homicide court project that I think has really helped is the agreement of the judges that they will follow the parties regarding sentence. I think if that could get carried over into the non-homicide courts, we could get some cases moving there as well. The inability to promise a client this is what you're going to get slows down a lot of cases. And I think that's been one of the key aspects of the homicide project that have made it work.
Not the judges or bookers.
I think we're all a little different
in that regard. The age of the position.
In your favor, I don't know if the judges go far as time, true.
Well, my sense would be that most of us try to follow stipulations when they're entered into, but there are occasions where, you know, independently as a judge, you view something and think, you know what, I don't agree with that. One way or the other, sometimes it benefits the prosecution, sometimes it benefits the defense. In the homicide cases, I think one of the things that you have is there is a much higher trust level with the judges and the attorneys about what the attorneys are doing and the wisdom that's going into a negotiation versus that trust level with a lot of younger track attorneys. That's just a personal opinion that I have as to where some of that fight may come from. But one other thing I wanted to point out, when you were asking Drew about the number of 250 qualified attorneys, this is going to be a real rubbing point, and Drew and I have talked about this. I mean, his people are stretched really, really thin, and well over 50-60% of the resolutions are coming from the private bar. So I know that the people that he has available for appointments are taking on an incredible number of cases.
Well, we hopefully never get to a situation where we have to say no boss. I think what I can monitor is the number of cases they give to the individual attorneys, and also monitor their trial schedule. So there's never anything back to back. I know that the murder project has been helpful with that, because I think many of my attorneys can go to court and then just resolve and finish one capital case. If I give them one today, then we'll see that trial for 2 or 3 years. So. But if we get to a point where trials start getting back to back to back, that's what we have to kind of
think. I'm very
concerned about some of the lawyers that you have taking those cases. I mean, not just the number of cases that you're giving them, but the number of cases that they have in their practice. You know, and it just seems impossible for them to be doing as many death penalty, for some of them to be doing as many death
penalty. There's been discussions in the past, I think came up in the Nevada right to counsel commission, if we should by contract or by plan require lawyers to give us their private exposure.
It's a tough question, but it's something that needs to be considered.
I know there are avoided cases.
How many death penalty cases are they getting? The people that take
try to keep it over 2 or 4, and that's a combination of whether they're first or second chair or the trial or second. We do have a Chris Warren, who's probably those times he's had up to 6.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So there's before us on the field's council.
Yeah, the crib, but you have to look at the horse for the course, and look at their schedule, and so it's a constant discussion pattern as to whether they can move on and what their role is. Are they first chair, second chair, the litigation council, or the trial council? Everybody kind of uses their role differently when they team up.
Yeah, what's the mood of the new commissioners, the new county commission? On giving Janelle and Phil and Stu and Steve Wilson some more people. I mean, you can't try, you know, these.
The short answer is every time we head into a legislative session, we have to be really cautious about what we can think about having as far as supplemental positions. So we never know until the session's over what other things they come up with. Carolina, I mean, a few years ago, the county started to pay for all of the PSI writers and all that. They're all state employees, but practically, you know, we paid for them. The juvenile probation officers, we ended up paying for those folks now. Here's another juvenile example. We have a few down here that has 96 beds, but they have a budget cap, and so they only have 48 folks in it. So that means those 48 kids are backed up into our institutions. And so there's a whole chain of those things that the state does during a legislative session that increases our unfunded mandates and our costs. So I never can answer that question until I get done with the session.
Well, I hope Ben and John have spent some time with the new folks.
Yeah, the school is important. I should say, I thought Judge Herndon, just one of the things we published on. There are many attorneys who are interested in 250 work. They don't meet the minimum qualifications, at least technically, by Rule 250. Except there is the option where you can petition chief criminal judge of the jurisdiction. Judge Herndon is being receptive to listening to an attorney that comes forward. I think related to two attorneys in your office.
We've done it with two, and we're about to do it with two more. Usually, those are attorneys who have like worked on a capital case and then had to negotiate at the last possible minute. So they've done the motion work, the investigation work, they've participated in other homicide cases, they've watched other capital cases, they've been to out-of-state intensive training, and usually the only thing they're missing is the capital penalty trial experience, which is hard to get because you can never be in a position of pushing a client into and then I've made the commitment that those attorneys who qualified in my letter, I will have a very experienced trial attorney doing 250 qualified attorney in there with them for that first trial when it ultimately goes.
But it's nice to have a judge heard about it.
I know that what I saw in the 80s has caused you a lot of interest when the tax returns were some death penalty cases in the 80s were debtors brought. And those cases are.
I thought that was the.
Well, I can tell you from the perspective. Hello? Yeah, I was just going to say from the perspective of a trial judge in Clark County, a couple of things. Number one, we only tried 2 capital cases over the course of the last year, so that's not a lot of opportunity for attorneys. Hello?
Yes. We hear you.
Okay.
parties to get qualified through the rule. So I agree that petitioning the court is a good way to do it if it's an appropriate person, because we have to give Drew more help. The reality, if I was spending the budget, I can tell you that I would absolutely add about 10 attorneys to Joan Hill's office. My daughter and I had a lot of conversation over the summer about this, because she's the primary author of some exoneration legislation that hopefully is going to get proposed through the legislature this year. And if you spend money on the front end getting more attorneys involved in this, you're going to save yourself headache from all kinds of appellate problems down the road. But I'm not the guy that's pulling the purse strings there.
Thank you, Mr. Janelle, for Curtis Guy, and thank you to the Federal Public Defender, for Steve Parker, the people who are on any Malone on death row that are off. Thanks to good lawyers. Okay, let's go back to the agenda. Is Joni on the phone?
She's here, room. Carson.
Oh, you're so far away. Joni, tell us about your discussion the day.
Well, I would invite Jeff Wells to also participate in this discussion, because he was an important part of that committee. I did see that Hans Jessup had some comments that and concerns that he made about the reporting tool. So I guess we're still considering this a work in progress. Would you agree with that, Jeff?
I need who's ever on the phone to put it on mute, please. We're getting somebody is on the phone.
I think it's the fourth judicial.
Thank you.
Joni, I didn't completely hear what you said, but I think what you said is that, well, we thought we might be done, that there have been a couple of comments come back in that we haven't, as a subgroup, actually addressed. So at this juncture, it's still a draft and not a final.
Yes.
Is that sort of what you said?
Yes, that's exactly what
I
said.
I think that's accurate.
I think it's great that you worked on it, Frank, because we've been struggling with that issue of caseload and rules for a long time. Although it's not exactly like the case definition stuff, I don't really care anymore, because at least we would be a start to right. be able to start getting some numbers.
This was a thing that Dagny was kind of chairing, and I know she's not here today, so I guess I've been sort of waiting for her to call our little subgroup together to consider the last comments and then update this if it needs to be updated or not.
Is Amy on the phone?
Yes, sir.
Nope.
Anything new in Clark County, Drew, Darren, Bill?
I do want to introduce the new public defender of Clark County, which is Darren Lynn.
Welcome, Darren.
Slowly grow, just couldn't do it once.
You know, because God bless
left in Reno, would they, Washoe, would they have an alternate public defender's office with a population of 400,000, 2.3 million? And that's not the true population, it's probably close to 2.5 million. We have two public defender's offices, so it doesn't make a lot of sense. But what do I know?
The next is from Washoe. John?
Mark?
Anything?
We pretty much gave you our update when Connor Conway's name was brought up. We do look forward to him providing us actual records and numbers, and he should be at the next meeting of this group, and we'll introduce him to you. And then as far as on our radar, just dealing with Marcy's Laws issues as they come up, the implementation thereof, we'll find out more from the district attorney's office tomorrow, and have had a couple issues come up already. And that's pretty much it. The numbers are staying steady. We're still seeing just an explosion in legal 2000 cases, hospitalizations. The hearings on those last till roughly 9 or 10 o'clock at night when the 9 days that they hold them. So it's put some stressors on our office, but we'll keep plowing through everything.
Justice, this is Mark. Just one thing to add. The Appointed Attorney Oversight Committee that I mentioned earlier, that Cotter was the member of, we had a meeting last week, and I guess in response somewhat to Franny's memo, we've been working actually on a revised version of our model plan for the last 3 or 4 months, making some changes in it. Our committee approved it last week, and I'm setting an appointment with the chief judge up here to present that to him in the next week or so to see if we can get a few changes through that simplify some of the issues, but also give the committee more oversight from counsel.
Mark, could you once you are able to, could you send that to me, the revised plan, so I could see whether or not there's some things in there that should be picked up in the model plan?
Absolutely. I'll send it on to you.
Okay.
And John McCormick, whenever we get any information on model plans, we make sure Freddie gets a copy of it right away.
Yep.
Thank you. I don't think that is Karen's not in Carson, is she?
She is.
Yeah.
Karen, Justice
Sherry.
Yes.
That's right.
I'm sorry, this is Judge Herndon, but I got to start my trial back up, so I'm going to get off the record.
See ya.
All right, thank you.
Karen?
Yes, sir. Nothing really exciting or new to report, but we are experiencing the same thing with the involuntary commitments. I'm not quite sure what's going on. We have a meeting set up with the hospital administrators and the judges and the court coordinator to try and figure out why there's been such an increase. But other than that, everything else is pretty much status quo.
Thank you. Is there any other business to come before the Interest Defense Commission? I want to thank everybody for another hopefully successful year, and we'll see what happens. I'll get a hold of Chief Justice Mark Evans and see what his plans are. I know that the commission that Douglas and I do with criminal rules and procedures, I think that Lydia is going to take that over with Abby. And I think there's a third person that they're involved in that.
Justice Hardesty.
Justice Hardesty. Yeah, would be involved.
So there were three of them?
Yeah. Ben, anything you want to say or John about the upcoming legislative session to our group?
From my standpoint, Justice Jerry, as I'm meeting with the leadership, I'm trying to learn who the new people are and what their priorities are. And from a professional standpoint, we're probably not very high on some of their priorities.
And everybody should know that Ben Graham, again, is our government affairs person. He's back in the saddle, as they say. Now that the daughter, Elena, is an incoming Justice of the Peace.
Thank you.
So welcome back, Ben.
Ben, if it makes you feel better, we're even lower on the list.
One's a chair. How are you?
Just wait and see. Michael, I've said it, everything that we do, just because it's the right thing to do, doesn't mean a damn. I mean, you gotta come up with a malady, what in the heck is really happening because of all of our failures.
Now, Ben, do you want us to go to the Christ Episcopal Church with signs and say, Ben Graham says it, just give us his right? Does it mean it's gonna happen? Oh boy. Anything else anybody wants to add? Thank you everybody for participating, and I'll send out an email when Jamie gets back as to if we're going to be meeting soon again.
Well, thanks, Justice Jerry, for your last 10 years.
Yeah.
Did you have a motion from us to support you staying on as chair of this
committee?
So moved.
I think more. I guess that's what I'm saying.
I took
a lot of fan of DVR.
I think
it's
something
that I had a lot of problems with it.